Welcome. Are you ready to take a journey with me into knowledge, enlightenment, and discovery? Then let's journey again together. This is your host, Rebecca Jernigan, and you're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Oh, thank you for joining us again today, and I have a very special guest today. His name is Sesh Hari, and he has written a book called The Handprint of Atlas. We're going to talk a lot more about Sesh in just a moment. I urge you to go to the website, that's journeyswithrebecca.com. There you can all find all the latest news under Our Journeys News and Our World News. And speaking of Our World News, something that just came up here probably in the last couple of weeks is the clouds in Saturn remain a mystery. And it's a six-sided cloud formation capping Saturn's North Pole. And, of course, NASA is a little boggled by it. Imagine that. I'm sure we're going to find out some more about that as the time goes on. And I promise to get you a guest on that will talk to us truthfully about what may be really going on Saturn as these things develop. Again, at the website, you're going to find information on CPAC and also under Jerry E. Smith. Jerry will be at the Conspiracy Con 7, that's Crown Plaza in San Jose, California, on May 26th and 27th. Of course, talking about weather warfare. And also, Walter Cruttenden will be in San Diego in October 2007. Again, links right there on the webpage. Please feel free to email me. That's mailbag at journeyswithrebecca.com. Welcome your comments, your guest suggestions, your questions. I can read them on the air. Anything. That would be great. Now, back to our guest today, Sesh Hari, The Handprint of Atlas. I'm going to direct you to their website, wonderoftheworlds.com. We're going to be talking a lot today about Tesla, about the theory of geomorphology. It's absolutely fascinating. Also about the theory of the artificial axis shift. Lots of great information coming from Sesh today. You are not going to want to miss this one because it is full of all kinds of information. It will pique your interest and certainly keep you glued to the radio right here, right now. So again, Sesh Hari joining us today on Journeys with Rebecca. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine, providing true accounts of the strange and unknown for over 58 years. To receive your free copy of Fate Magazine, call 800-728-2730 or log on to fatemag.com.
Call Rebecca and schedule your private reading. 888-95-TAROT. That's 888-958-2768. Where will your life journey take you?
Email Rebecca with your comments to mailbag at journeyswithrebecca.com. You're listening to Journeys with Rebecca.
Oh, welcome, welcome, welcome. And as promised, we have Sesh Hari with us today, and we're going to be discussing, among other things, the handprint of Atlas. And we're going to be talking about the theory geomorphology, artificial axis shift, and we're going to be getting into Wonder of the Worlds, which is also about Tesla, and we're going to let Sesh tell us all about that. Welcome to the show today, Sesh.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. I'm very delighted to be here today.
Well, we're excited to have you here as well. This is going to be so much fun. We've had a little bit of a difficulty getting together, but now that we have, I'm just thrilled to have you here.
Yeah, it's worth the effort, isn't it?
It is. It always is, because I think this is really going to really intrigue everyone out there today, because this is something totally different, what we're going to be talking about. So as we're talking about the handprint of Atlas, you have a theory, and that was kind of how we decided that we wanted to start this, is what is your theory on this, and then we're going to kind of move in with that, because that's just going to be so much fun, just to talk about that part of it as well.
Yeah, well, you know, this began quite a few years ago, and actually, as I've said to some people, the handprint of Atlas is, in a way, sort of the autobiography of Sesh Hari, because it describes psychic experiences I've had throughout my life, and it goes all the way back to my early childhood. And what happened to me in 1985, on the other hand, was quite an extraordinary experience that was the turning point of a lot of these psychic experiences I'd been having in childhood and early adulthood. And this happened in Florida, and I describe the event in detail in the book, but essentially what happened was an automobile accident. And out of that, I began studying the landforms of Florida. This automobile accident had all sorts of synchronicities surrounding it. And it involved other events that had happened to me on this Florida trip. One of the things that I did on this Florida trip was to visit Coral Castle. I'm sure you're familiar with Edward Leach Scanlon and his work down there in Florida, right, Rebecca?
You know, I am, but what we might want to do is just very briefly is to share it with the audience for those who do not know what that is, if you can summarize it.
Yeah, Coral Castle is down south of Miami, and it's about an acre of land which a Latvian immigrant in the early 20th century, he built a large megalithic castle on this site out of oolitic limestone, which is it's the rock indigenous to Florida, and it's very easy to cut when it's wet, but then you put it together and it dries out to a hard rock. But what's amazing about this is that he cut this in giant blocks of stone, many tons of stone, and no one knows how he lifted these stones up and built this construction. Well, there are many theories on it, that he might have used anti-gravity, that this might have been a ley line, that he might have been an alchemist. And so in 1985, one of the things I wanted to do while I was in Florida was to visit this site. And I did visit it, and it was quite a complex of events that happened, but the upshot of this was that I began studying the landforms of Florida and determined that Leach Scanlon had built Coral Castle at that site for a specific reason. And this eventually led to me discovering many things about the Earth. And eventually I formed a whole theory of geomorphology and geophysics that it explains many things. It explains why the Great Pyramid is built where it is built. It explains the ley lines that cross the Earth, why they are sited in the particular locations they are. And so it was all very involved, and it took many years for me to figure this out. And in the process of doing this, I began to learn other things. I discovered the existence of Nikola Tesla, and that's another name I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with. Nikola Tesla was a genius inventor of the 19th and 20th centuries, and he's practically forgotten today, but he invented radio and alternating current, and really he invented our modern technological society. I became very intrigued with Nikola Tesla because I had studied Mark Twain's writings for nearly 20 years before that. I had probably read everything Mark Twain had ever wrote. I had studied his correspondence, his personal journals, and I had never come across a mention of Tesla in any of this. And I was amazed that Tesla had been suppressed from history. And so that set me off on another tangent of research. And eventually it all came full circle. It came back to this original study I was involved with. And it also led to me writing the novel Wonder of the Worlds, which is about Nikola Tesla and Mark Twain.
Well, now, it's so interesting that you brought all that up, because that's how I actually discovered Tesla was through Mark Twain, and I have no idea now. It's been so many years ago. But I was studying Mark Twain. Somehow Tesla came up, and then I started the whole thing with the Tesla thing. And so for about a year, I immersed myself into trying to find out as much information about Tesla as I could, because again, like you said, it's like he's been wiped from you know, the books and from everything, and yet he was such an integral part of why we are here and the things that we are now enjoying in what we call modern society.
Yes.
And so, you know, obviously he was some kind of a perceived, because he wasn't, but he was a perceived enemy or something. I'll use that term kind of very loosely, to those who were in power and control. That's a whole nother, show, but...
That's a whole nother show. But definitely he was perceived that way, and that was the reason that ultimately I think that he was forgotten out of the history books. And but I began studying what Tesla was doing, and the thing that really startled me when I really began looking at the particular sites where he did some of his experiments, I found that they were very similar to other sites I had studied that were ley lines or lays, and particularly the Great Pyramid of Giza. And I realized that what Tesla had done, he had either rediscovered or he was using the same principles that were used with those constructions. He was citing his constructions on land stresses. Throughout the Earth, there are land stresses in the continents that are caused when the continents move laterally across the surface of the Earth. And these stresses are caused because the subtle gravitational field is it's not smooth or regular. It has lines of force running through it, so it creates very faint gravity anomalies. And as the land masses start to move across these gravity anomalies, these anomalies act as attractors. They tend to pull the land down or hold it in place. So even though they are extremely faint, and even with a modern-day gravimeter, you probably couldn't really get a clear reading on where these gravity anomalies are. Over hundreds of thousands and millions of years, you get this cumulative stress building up, and it actually causes the land to slow down when it reaches one of these anomalies and hold in place. This causes other landforms moving on toward that, say that mountain or whatever that local feature is, to fold up to create landfalls. And you can see how this would inform the whole structure of the continent. It would actually create all the shapes and everything. And where you have these stress lines, there's a lot of energy flowing along there, because these stress lines, they form waveguides of energy. And there are two aspects to this, broadly speaking. There's a physical aspect, and there's a metaphysical, a psychic aspect to it. And throughout human history, both aspects have been used. What I discovered with Tesla, he was using the physical aspect with his propagation of the radio waves and the longitudinal electricity, but others have used these in quite different ways to pick up on psychic impressions. Another example is the Australian Aborigines. When they have the dream time, they're using these power points where these stress lines run to the power points, and they can actually send messages and receive messages over these long distances instantaneously, or even in a reverse time sequence. So there's some amazing phenomena surrounding these sites.
Wow. Okay, I didn't know about the Aborigines.
Oh, yes.
I didn't know that's what they were doing. That is absolutely. Are they still doing that?
Yes, they're still doing that.
Wow. See, we don't need telephone wires.
Oh, and it's amazing. There's all sorts of anecdotes about the European settlers coming in and wondering how did the Aborigines know this or that was going to happen in a distant town, and they would then explain to them they went to the dream time spot and learned all this. So this is how we began to learn about their culture, and they're not the only ones, of course, that do this. Even the American Indians have this practice of going to certain sites to commune with the spirits, and it's essentially the same process going on, and you find it throughout the world. Now in the Handprint of Atlas, I discuss how the city of Lhasa in Tibet, that is sited on the center of a pinwheel of landfalls that forms almost something like, you could describe it like a flower, and Lhasa is right at the center of that pinwheel. And I speculate that that might have been the reason that the Buddhists made that the holy city for the Dalai Lama, you know.
Well, and I think that's something that people do need to recognize, too, is that these ley lines and these energy spaces, for the lack of a better way of saying it, that's what they call sacred sites. There was a purpose for those sacred sites because they were able to access it.
Yes.
And utilize it for advancement of the spirit of the self.
Yes.
So it's really fascinating. I mean, that's really fascinating on that.
Yes, and yes, it's very ancient. It goes way back all the way to Atlantis. And that's what the Great Pyramid was all about, in my opinion, from everything I've studied about it. I believe that it was a very advanced alchemical device. There's been several researchers in recent years who have noted that the Great Pyramid is it exhibits extreme precision of construction, a very high technology, and I think a lot of people would agree with that. Christopher Dunn, for example, he put forth the theory that the Great Pyramid was an electrical power generator. And then there's Joseph P. Farrell, who put forth the theory that the Great Pyramid was a weapon of mass destruction in a gigantic interplanetary war. These are very interesting ideas, and I think they have some merit, but I think what the Great Pyramid was originally, in later years, I think it was its purpose was subverted and turned to weaponization. But the original purpose of the Great Pyramid was to advance man's consciousness. It was an alchemical device, and I describe that in the Handprint of Atlas very clearly. How I believe that the Atlantean king actually astrally projected into the Great Pyramid while it was sealed and operating under extremely high pressures, and it was reverberating with all sorts of energy, electrical power, acoustical power, and this was to work on his subtle energy body, but also it was to benefit mankind as a whole. So it's a very complicated process, but I believe that it was an esoteric device.
You know, and I have to agree with you, because when I have, psychically been attuned to the pyramids, one of the things that, you know, from watching all the specials, you know, they have everyone has an idea, you know, logically of what this was. And I have always felt like that there was just, it's almost like if you look at a infrared light or the lasers that are, you know, you can't see unless there's something that's been thrown on it or changed so that you can see all of it. I see all these energy lines running in and out of and through the pyramid, and just almost to the point where I physically have a reaction to the abundance of energy that comes from the pyramid at one point. Yeah. Now, obviously, it shifted and changed through the years, but I've never seen it as a weapon. However, I do believe at some point it may have been used for that, but that wasn't its original purpose,
right,
or idea, or application. But as with everything,
idea,
it can be muted and transmuted.
Yes, and yes, I believe that originally it was a device to develop the human race, and then it was subverted into a weapon,
yes,
and eventually destroyed. Some of this, Zechariah Sitchin, some of his ideas I find interesting, and other people, a lot of the ancient legends seem to point to an idea that there was some kind of ancient war and the Great Pyramid was involved with that. But I don't view it that it was originally built as a weapon. It was, in my view, it was an alchemical device to advance the human race. And it was a very high civilization, I believe, they had. And I also think that the Great Pyramid today, even in a ruined state, as you're describing, you're getting impressions of energy coming out of it. It's still a center of vital energy to this day, because it was built on a convergence of these ley lines. They're actually straight-line gravity anomalies, and they're very faint. And this is the basis of the ley system throughout the Earth. And vital energy runs along these lines, and they all converge there at the Great Pyramid. So that's why the original builders put it there. They had to put it there. Some people might say, how could the Great Pyramid be an Atlantean device if Atlantis was out in where the Atlantic Ocean is today? But they had to put it there because that's where all the lines converge on the Earth at that point. That was the optimum point to place it. So it's just like today in the United States, we have radio telescopes in foreign countries. We have things going on in other places, but it's still something we're doing elsewhere because that's the place to do it, you know. So
right, it's the best, it's the most optimal place,
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, and you know, I'm glad we talked about the pyramid, because one of the things is that obviously it's a structure that has remained for, you know, long time.
Oh yes.
And I believe that it is there for a purpose, and at some point, hopefully, maybe in our lifetimes yet, Sesh, mm-hmm, we may find out exactly what this is for. But it's certainly, its original intent was not of, you know, a weaponry, mm-hmm, and it really is a very holy place.
Yes.
And the residual energies that lay there are there, are going to remain there.
Yes.
And so I'm really, you know, I'm really waiting for the time when somebody really gets it and it becomes public knowledge for everyone.
Yeah,
and
that would be exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. Yeah. Very exciting. Hey, Sesh, don't go away, because we've got some more on geomorphology and artificial axis shift. You guys stay with us. We'll be right back.
Sure to check out Mark Kerr's debut CD, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com. This flawless debut performance earned Mark an induction into the Blues Hall of Fame as Ambassador to the Blues for the state of Louisiana. Also, it earned him a nomination for Musician of the Year in 2006 by the Academy of Texas Music. Mark Kerr, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com.
For 58 years, Fate has provided true reports of the strange and unknown. Fate is a factual magazine containing articles by experts in all walks of life and by others just like you who have something dramatic, significant, and truthful to say. Keep up with the latest on all aspects of the paranormal, angels and miracles, psychic phenomena, ghosts, UFOs, and much, much more. To receive your free Fate magazine, call now, 800-728-2730, or visit our website at www.fatemag.com. That's 1-800-728-2730, or www.fatemag.com. What are you waiting for? Your fate waits.
Have questions about your love life or your job? Get your private psychic reading from Rebecca. call to schedule an appointment at 1-888-958-2768. That number again is 1-888-958-2768.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Well, thanks for staying with us. We're here today with Sesh Puri. We're talking about several things. We're talking about the handprint of Atlas. We're also talking about Wonder of the Worlds. We've talked a little bit about Tesla, of course, the Great Pyramids, the ley lines, that kind of thing. We've just been having a lot of fun with this, in my opinion, Sesh. But one of the things that really struck me when I was looking over your material was what I announced on the last segment, which was the artificial axis shift. I think that is something anybody who is interested in this particular mode of conversation that we're having or topic, I think is going to be very interested in that particular artificial axis shift information that you have for us today.
Yeah, and that's really amazing. And even though I discovered this, every time I think about it, I just kind of go, wow, because it's really mind-boggling. But what I discovered was that the Earth's axis of rotation is artificial. And this came about through studying the geomorphology and the geophysics, and it was very involved over a number of years. And I explain all this in detail in the book, but what it came down to eventually was realizing that the way the continents of the Earth are distributed show that there should be another axis, rotational axis to the Earth, and the North Pole should be up about around where Baffin Island is. And this is reflected also in the Brahman star charts of thousands of years ago. They show the stars in a different position than they are today. I remember reading many, many years ago Emanuel Velikovsky's World in Collision, and he discussed those star charts in that book, and that came back to me when I was doing the study of the geophysics of the Earth. And although I think Velikovsky was wrong about many things, he did make some accurate predictions, and I think he was correct about this shift in the axis of the Earth. And so I looked into this, and I realized that if the Earth's axis had shifted, there had to be a mechanical cause for that. And the only way you can get a spheroid to rotate on an axis is to strike it surface at a tangent. And a tangent is a right angle to a direct hit. Let's say if you were just going right directly to the surface at a 90 degree angle, a tangent would be 90 degrees to that, if you could see what I'm saying.
Right.
You know, if it's a globe of the Earth, for example, and you were just going to brush the side of it with your hand, you'd be striking it at a tangent. So I looked along the equator for some sign of a disturbance. I was specifically looking for something that would be like a crater or a crater lake. And what I came across, really, it stopped me, because when I got to Africa, I saw Lake Victoria, and it's positioned precisely on the equator. And I began studying Lake Victoria very carefully, and what I finally determined was that that is the site of where a large object hit the Earth thousands of years ago and literally wrenched the planet into a new axis of rotation. And there are ancient legends that describe this object approaching the Earth, and it's all over the world. It's in Polynesia, the American Indians, the Native Americans, in Europe, it's described. In Greek mythology, it's described. Among the in India, in their ancient text, it's described. And it's usually described as a three-headed serpent or object approaching in the sky. And that's what this object was, how it was composed. It had a main central body, and then it had three equal parts in front of it, like a three-headed creature. And people could see this approaching in the sky, and when it hit the earth, it caused gigantic floods and earthquakes everywhere. So if you look at Lake Victoria, you will see that that is a tangential crater lake. It's caused by an object striking the earth at a very shallow angle and then immediately wrenching the planet. So you have this gigantic spiral shape. Now, geophysicists have studied this area in Africa, and they don't really understand the Great African Rift, how it was formed, and the structures in that area. But what that is, the reason they can't understand it, is that it's the result of a massive strike to the Earth that changed the axis of rotation, and locally, when it first hit, it created this gigantic spiral motion that twisted the local landmass around. So you have the Great African Rift twisting around in a great spiral. If your listeners will go to a map or a globe where they can see Lake Victoria and the African Rift, they can actually see that giant spiral in the earth. And I concluded that it had to have happened just a few thousand years ago. And after looking at all the factors involved, I pretty well pinpointed it down to the end of the last ice age. I believe this happened about 11,000, 12,000 years ago. And in fact, I explain why I think the ice age ended. There was a 1,000-year period of warming, and then there was a mini ice age, which the geophysicists can't explain. And I think the reason there was that mini ice age was that what happened when this object struck, it hit at a tangent at such a force that it actually ejected material into orbit. And this material orbited the Earth for 1,000 years in a low orbit, and then the orbit decayed and it rained back upon the Earth and created another nuclear winter mini ice age. And then when that cleared out, you had the present conditions we have today. So I discovered this through all my experiences in Florida, the synchronicities I had there. I went back and I analyzed all this, and I came up to this conclusion. So I present this all in the handprint of Atlas and describe it in detail, and I don't have time today to talk about it as much as I would like to, but if any of your listeners, have any questions, are we going to get call-in listeners today?
No, not today.
Okay.
But we will have you back on.
Okay.
Here in the next probably few weeks to a few months, we will be doing live shows at that point.
Okay.
And we will have listeners to call in, and we'll be certainly talking about not only the handprint of Atlas, but Wonder of the Worlds as well.
Right.
But, that was the thing that I found was most fascinating when I was reading the handprint of Atlas, was the artificial axis shift.
Yeah.
Because when you look at your theory, when you go through all of this, and you really start putting all the pieces together, it just makes total sense with what we know, and we don't know a whole lot, but what we do know of history and geology and geography and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there has been, and they know that something hit the earth. They do know that.
Yes.
Which created the ice age, and that's what wiped out life.
Yes.
And I believe, and I always have believed, that it was something that was intentional.
Yes.
And in your book, you talk about how that is intentional.
Yes.
And I think that's what's most fascinating. Because you also bring in a lot of the other components on different pieces of information that I myself have learned along the way.
Yeah.
Just by reading and doing, being interested in different things.
Yes.
And obviously I haven't spent here as much time as you have on it.
Well, it is fascinating, and there's a wealth of information out there to tap into. And, one aspect of it, and get back to the Great Pyramid just for a second, this strike that created Lake Victoria is view south of the Great Pyramid. This is one of the things that shows that it was an artificial strike, because as many people have noted, the Great Pyramid is positioned on a unique longitude. It crosses more solid landmass than any other landmass in the world. So this is an ideal position in which to effect a mechanical translational compression stress to force the Earth into another direction of rotation. So there's a lot of little telltale evidence in the geology, the geophysics, in the mythology. There's just a wealth of information out there, you know, and other people could look into this too and perhaps make some amazing discoveries themselves.
Yes, because like you said, there's just not enough time to get into all the real minute details, and you have detailed it out very, very well.
Thank you.
In the handprint of Atlas, you really have. So we're going to urge everyone to definitely get a copy of that. Now, you also wanted to get back talking about Wonder of the Worlds again.
Yeah, Wonder of the Worlds, I'm very excited about it. Because Tesla wasn't recognized, I really wrote this book to get people to take notice of what he did and give him some recognition. And there have been some biographies out. But, you know, sometimes when you just tell the dry facts of a thing, it doesn't inspire people. It doesn't get to the heart of the matter. And so I really felt that, especially his relationship with Mark Twain, it just begged to be done as a novel, as a fictional story. And so I created this fictional story, which is nested into the historical facts. So what I've really written is a historical novel, but I just added in the least bit, what if. And the more I study on Tesla, the more I wonder how little fiction is in my novel, because so much of it is true. And another interesting thing I might say is that as I was writing this novel, I would create fictional characters, which I intended later to find a historical person to play this part, if you can see what I mean.
Right.
And so I would create this fictional character, and then I would go and do the historical research, and I would find these historical people who fit my fictional characters perfectly. And one example of this that I tell in some of my conferences is the character Lily West. She's one of the main characters in Wonder of the Worlds. She's trying to find out what Tesla's doing. When I originally wrote this character, she was going to be a newspaper reporter in Chicago. And I came up with the name Lily West because I wanted her to sound like someone who lived back then. And, you know, Lily was popular back then. There was Lily Langtree and Lillian Russell. And the name West, I wanted to connotate the Old West and the adventure of the Old West. I wanted a character kind of like Annie Oakley, someone who was a sharpshooter and, you know, could really take care of themselves very well. And so I had this name Lily West, and then I decided, well, that sounds a little too obvious. I'll change that name and get another name and go on from there. So then as I began researching the actual people in Chicago, I was looking for a woman newspaper reporter. And I knew I might have a little difficulty there, but I did find one woman newspaper reporter in 1893, and her name was Amy Leslie. And I began researching her, and she was very obscure. She was a drama critic, and she wrote two books. I could find very little information on her. And then finally, I got her full biography, and I found out that Amy Leslie was just her pen name, and her real name was Lily West.
Oh, my goodness.
And And
now,
really,
coincidence? I don't think so. Somebody was talking to you.
Yeah, the real Lily West was just like my character. She was a sharpshooter and everything. You know.
Well, you guys, don't go away, because we're going to be more. We're going to be back with more of Sesh, the handprint of Atlas, and Wonder of the Worlds. Don't go away.
If you're one of the thousands of listeners that tune into internet radio every day, a recent decision by the Copyright Royalty Board is about to change your life. The newly announced royalty rates for internet radio could force this station and thousands of others in the USA to close down. Your help is critical. The only way to preserve your freedom of choice and continue to enjoy music not offered on terrestrial stations is to act now. Visit www.savenetradio.org to learn about this legal ruling and what it means for hundreds of internet radio stations in the USA and the thousands of listeners that tune into them every day. Together, we can reverse this decision. Don't delay. Visit www.savenetradio.org right now and learn what you can do to help. That web address is www.savenetradio.org.
Hello, I'm Jane Goodall, only half of the world's forests and wetlands that existed at the start of the 20th century still exist today. We must do a far better job of protecting wildlife habitats, or environmental chaos awaits those who follow us. If you own land you want kept safe forever, the Wildlife Land Trust can help. Call 1-800-729-SAVE, 1-800-729-SAVE.
Check out Rebecca's website for the latest Journeys news and more. Log on to www.journeyswithrebecca.com.
Well, thanks for staying with us. We're here with Sesh Puri, and we are talking about the handprint of Atlas, but more specifically, Wonder of the Worlds from the last segment when you were talking to us about a supposed fictional character named Lily West, and come to find out she was not fictional. So we're going to let you pick up the story where you left off. That's so fun.
Oh, yes. And that was just the beginning of it for me. When I realized that Lily West was a real person, I knew I had my woman reporter, and I knew I was onto something. So I continued my researches into the history of Chicago and the characters that were in Chicago in the year 1893. And I found a whole bunch more synchronicities involving Amy Leslie and the reporter George Ade, who was another writer who is forgotten today. But he wrote a number of things. And ironically, he was admired by Mark Twain and William Dean Howells, as they enjoyed his novels. He was also a successful playwright. And George Ade and Lily West are very important characters in the story of Wonder of the Worlds, because they discover that President Grover Cleveland, who was supposed to be in Chicago on May 1st of 1893 for the grand opening of the Chicago World's Fair, is actually already in Chicago. This is 2 weeks earlier, and he's sighted in a hotel, entering a hotel, and George Ade and Lily West began following him, and the result of this is they follow President Cleveland, Nikola Tesla, and Mark Twain to a mysterious warehouse on the shores of Lake Michigan, south of the World's Fair, and they watch as Mark Twain, with Tesla and Cleveland at his side, pilots an airship out of this warehouse and over the moonlit waters of Lake Michigan. And that's the beginning of Wonder of the Worlds. The reporters are trying to figure out what's going on with this airship and another mysterious airship that appears over Chicago. Some of your listeners may be aware of the mystery airships of 1896, and in the 1890s there were many, many sightings of airships throughout the western United States from San Francisco to Chicago. So this was really happening. People were really seeing airships like this at the time. And when you look at the work of Nikola Tesla, it becomes very clear that something was going on that was very real, very technological, and even perhaps Tesla was involved with this in some ways. There's some indication that I later found, actually some of it was after I had written the novel, rumors that perhaps Tesla had built an airship and had even gone so far as to go to Mars. And this is what my story is about. Nikola Tesla and Mark Twain and several other historical characters going to Mars.
Wow. Well, you know, theoretically, anything's possible, right?
Right.
And that doesn't mean it didn't happen, but I do remember all those stories. I remember through some of my, you know, readings and things that I have found that they, you know, through what they call the UFO thing and all of that, that they've talked about a surge of sightings, so to speak, in that time frame.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's just filled in history on, you know, airships, whatever you want to call them, UFOs, flying saucers, whatever, that they were discovered around there. Because I'm originally from Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
So I was doing a lot of research on the areas around the lakes and, you know, that's not that far from, you know, where I grew up.
All right.
And so it's there is definite correlation there and correspondence there with many people who are talking about the sightings in that area.
Yes. And, you know, there's some people have made a correlation between the close approach of Mars to Earth, astronomically speaking, which occurs every 2 years, and an increase in UFO sightings. And they think there might be some kind of connection to that. But there's been strange sightings of phenomena on Mars going back into the 19th century. From 1873 onward through the 1890s and even well into the 20th century, there's been all sorts of lights and geometric configurations observed on the surface of Mars by astronomers. In 1936, a member of the British Interplanetary Society speculated that there might be a crumbling civilization on the surface of Mars. And you kind of have to wonder, how did they know this, or how did they speculate about this? In some of my researches with H.G. Wells, there's some very interesting synchronicities that tie into his writing of the War of the Worlds and these historical characters, Lily West and George Ade, who are involved in my storyline, so that, you know, you wonder what happened. Did something really happen with Mars, or was there some sort of communication with Mars? There's the legend that Tesla had radio communications with Mars as early as 1903, and in 1899 he received some mysterious radio signals at Colorado Springs. Early in the 1970s, the Stanford Research Institute remote viewed what has now become known as the face on Mars. So all of this happened long before the Viking photograph of the face on Mars. And there very well might have been some kind of secret knowledge of the constructions on Mars, and there might be secret knowledge of some kind of present life on Mars. In my novel, there's actually a human civilization living on Mars underground, and they have come to Earth to study us. And so all of these things seem, if you're not studying it, you're not aware of it, they seem far out, but there's a lot of facts backing up this fictional storyline of Wonder of the World.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree with that 110%. And I've always felt that myself, is that there was probably life life on Mars. I truly believe that. You know, as usual, this time has went by really, really fast.
Boy.
And what I want to do is to let you tell everyone how they can get a hold of the Handprint of Atlas,
okay,
Wonder of the Worlds, your website, and all that information so that they can have that. And, of course, it will be posted to my website as well.
Right.
So there'll be a hot link. I call it a hot link. But okay. You'll let everyone know where they can get those two books.
Okay. The Handprint of Atlas, I've just completed writing it. In fact, I'm drawing the illustrations for it right now. And it's going to be coming out this summer, around hopefully July. It'll go to print. It's being published by Adventures Unlimited Press. And so anyone interested in purchasing a copy of that, keep an eye out for the Adventures Unlimited catalog. It will no doubt be available in all the bookstores and all that. Barnes & Noble's, Borders Books. So just keep an eye out for Handprint of Atlas late summer, early fall of this year. Wonder of the Worlds is available now. They can go to wonderoftheworlds.com. That's our website for the novel. Or if they want to order from the publisher, lostcontinentlibrary.com, amazon.com, or it can be ordered through Barnes & Noble's Borders Books.
Absolutely fabulous, Sesh. And what we will do is we'll have you back on with the live audience, and we'll be taking questions. Thank you so much for being with us. You guys don't go away. We'll be right back with more of Journeys with Rebecca.
Be sure to check out Mark Kerr's debut CD, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com. This flawless debut performance earned Mark an induction into the Blues Hall of Fame as Ambassador to the Blues for the state of Louisiana. Also, it earned him a nomination for Musician of the Year in 2006 by the Academy of Texas Music. Mark Kerr, One Drink Away from the Blues, at www.cdbaby.com.
Journeys with Rebecca is sponsored by Fate Magazine, providing true accounts of the strange and unknown for over 58 years. To receive your free copy of Fate Magazine, call 800-728-2730 or log on to fatemag.com.
Hi, this is Rebecca. This is the place where your journey begins. Is your career or business headed in the right direction? Is your love life all it can be, or is it missing something? Perhaps you're still looking for that someone special. And those closest to you, will what they do influence or affect you? For truthful, accurate, and compassionate answers to your unique life's journey, contact me by calling 1-888-958-2768. To schedule your personal and private reading. Where will your life's journey take you?
Don't forget to find out where your life's journey will lead you. Call Rebecca to set up your personal and private reading at 1-888-958-2768. That's 1-888-958-2768.
Thank you to my wonderful guest today. And thank you for listening. Please take a moment and check out the wonderful sponsors of Journeys, Fate Magazine. Published continuously since 1948, Fate is the longest-running publication of its kind. Find out more at www.fatemag.com. Please visit my website for more information. That's journeyswithrebecca.com. And of course, there you'll find all the latest news, events, and show information. And please feel free to write me. Tell me what you think of the show or my guests. Email me at mailbag@journeyswithrebecca.com. Or leave a message on my comment line, 913-828-5559. Until we meet again, where will your life's journey lead you. Many blessings, and good night.